Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hi there, it's Julia Louis-Dreyfus. You may know me from my podcast called Wiser Than Me, where I talk to older women and get their wisdom from the front lines of life. I was amazed by how many people told me our show made them look forward to getting older, which is why I'm here to talk about season 2 of the show. Sally Field, Billie Jean King, Beverly Johnson, Ina Garten, Bonnie Raitt, just to name a few. All hail old women. Wiser Than Me season 2 is out now from Lemonada Media.
Breathe. Okay, happy hour. I know what you told me, Prowse, but it's just no woman. It's Michael Norrie.
Yay!
Actor. I can't really look right at you yet. Okay. What did I say, Michael? When you walked in, I was like, all right, you know this. You need to give every woman a minute. And you're holding up a bitches get shit done Hillary button as if you could be any hotter.
I know. The first thing you said when you walked in, we said, what's this on the news? What's going on? Is there breaking news? And I was like, yeah, that's new. That's new.
Listen,
since last hour.
I've seen you. You've done lots of stuff since Flashdance. You're a brilliant actor, singer. But I love this piece, That Guy in Flashdance. And this is what I was saying to you guys this morning. Mention the name Michael Norrie to any women beneath the ages of, I would say, like it says, this one says 30 to 60. I would say that's a wider range. And people, women lose their shit, Michael. How have you been dealing with it? This article is hilarious about women saying, I've seen women literally jump on him. So see, I restrained myself.
I saw you jump on him
the way
upstairs.
You did this morning when we first met.
Yes.
I did not.
Stephanie, I have to say,
not.
It's really a joy to be here with you and to meet you. Really.
Okay, someone talked about your kind eyes. Okay, all that. Okay, I can't. It's just, can I? I have to say, what a feeling. I do. I can't. Oh. Just. All right. Okay, that's it. That's it. All right. I won't do it again. How? What? At what year did you get sick of Flashdance jokes? Do you think?
Never.
Oh, really?
No. It's great. I've gotten used to Flashdance being my middle name for the past 37 years. I went through a time of kind of resenting it and saying, oh, God, is this ever going to end? You know, I have done other things before and since. You know, I was on Broadway for a year and a half with Julie Andrews.
Yeah, I know.
Victor Victoria. That, and, you know, it's not Michael Victor Victoria.
Right.
Yeah.
It's Flashdance. Speaking to the kind of global impact that film had on people. So
and that whole genre of dancer welder movies.
Oh, I don't
name, you know, another, what I was thinking
name
too?
Another welder movie. What's right. Another welder movie?
No, seriously. I know the entire soundtrack. Like, it's not just,
yes,
I mean.
Oh, yeah, she was calling the lesser known songs during the show today. Yeah.
Everyone knows Manhunt.
Yeah.
I'm obviously on a manhunt right now.
Okay.
But
That's awkward.
What?
You're on a hunt for a woman.
Listen, no, you don't even understand what just happened in my backyard.
What?
I saw.
What I happened? Just said, listen, you still have the same effect on me as in when Dave, and I said, and I'm gay. And you were like, really? Now, when did you discover that? And I'm like, I don't know, but it's just gone now, talking to you, looking in your eyes. I don't know.
Those kind eyes.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know, but it's gone now. No, but we got started talking a little bit, but I thought that was so fascinating about how many people talk about, and actually I love that someone asked you in this interview, are you a womanizer? And you said, no, the women I'm with are manizers. But they
just say that.
But it's not just because you're good looking, because you don't. Well, there's a lot of guys in Hollywood that are good looking. It's all these women say the same thing, that you're so in touch with your feminine side and that you're so sort of, and you truly love women, which is fantastic, particularly in the era we're living through right now.
Well, what I love is people. I love people. I love particularly passionate people,
yeah,
and kind people. And at the top of my list, if you were to ask me if I practice a religion, it would be kindness.
Yeah,
that is my religion. That is my core belief of how I can make a contribution to kind of every day when I go out into the world. If I can find some act of kindness, it doesn't matter how small.
Yeah.
It enhances my life and gives me a sense of purpose.
Your voice is hypnotizing me, and also
that's all right. Just your eyelids are getting heavy.
It's not a flash dance splash. It's a
the redness is disappearing.
And so, you told me I can't do that. I can't pour the glass of water over myself. No. I can't take my bra off during the.
No.
I can't eat lobster with my fingers. Okay.
There's not going to be any glitter.
Fine. Listen, do you understand? Dreaming. Every woman's been dreaming about this their whole life. I can't believe I got something in my eye, Chris. It was like, you know, when you're having your high school pictures done, you're like, oh, yep. Is that a zit? I'm like, I get to meet Michael Norrie, and there's my eyes beat. My one good eye.
Yes.
But okay. Because I was laughing too when you think about that you were Jennifer Fields. I love that they describe it, boss/boyfriend. So this was way pre Me Too.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
I mean, you couldn't really make that movie. I mean, you could make it today, but you know what I'm saying?
It was an Adrian Lyne movie, so.
Right.
Yeah, he kind of went there. He always went there.
Right.
Yeah.
You know?
Right, but they made it sexy and fantastic. And like today, you're like, what?
But it was also, there was nothing non-consensual.
Right.
Right.
That's true.
In the film.
Right.
Right.
Well, yeah, but I do think that's, I don't know, Michael. I know you get, obviously, this is the people you follow, and I'm looking on Twitter, you know. I always say, like, how can you not be political now? But there's the misogyny, not just that Hillary faced, but that I think caused the Women's March, that caused this sort of blue wave in Congress, to all these laws that just passed that's, like, literally Handmaid's Tale, right? Somebody was talking, too, about, they said, you know, when frozen embryos, they just throw them away, in fertility clinics. Republicans don't care about the child. They care about controlling women. And in not in a nice way, right?
Let me just say that I am. So this will kind of direct the course of this time that we have together.
Mm-hmm. Oh dear!
I am not political.
Yeah.
I am somewhere between apolitical and anti-political.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I believe in. I take care of my side of the street. Keep it clean.
Yeah.
Live. Try to live what I believe. And try to practice what I know to be good and just live as an example. I am as disturbed and it's not to say that I am not disturbed and concerned about what's going on, which is concerning and disturbing.
Yeah.
In the country. but it is, my take on it is that it is, if we can kind of elevate it to a helicopter point of view,
yeah,
that there is some profound evolutionary thing going on in this globally and certainly in this country for the individual who now occupies the White House. For that to occur, there has to be something profound upheaval going on underneath mm-hmm. all of it.
Yeah.
And it is rising to the surface.
Yeah.
Like a pimple.
Right. Mm-hmm. He didn't invent racism or misogyny. He seems to have emboldened and incited a lot of people, though.
Yeah. 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 So I think what a lot of us are, I'm thinking, what can I do? What can I possibly do to make a positive difference in the world and what's going on? I have kids. I have
two daughters, in fact.
Two daughters and a brand new grandson who was born 12 days ago.
Oh,
congratulations.
Wow.
Thank you.
Congrats.
And how can I?
You're the hottest grandpa, literally, in the world.
Thank you.
Oh, boy. Oh,
Stephanie.
Travis, it's not like he's not used to it.
I know.
I'm like the last drop in a full glass. I mean, really?
I'm not going to be able to get my head through that.
No, but that is interesting, too, that you have two daughters. I mean, where did you come by your sort of, what other people describe as, not necessarily your feminism, but just your connection with women? Yeah. Because it literally is sort of legendary. Like, everything I've read about you someone mentions it.
Mm.
Yeah.
What did they mention?
Oh, well, let me, hang on. Let me read. Mention the name Nick Norrie to any woman between 30 and 60, they light up. Yes, I did. I also couldn't make eye contact when he got here. It's been, well, this is not, when was this article? This has been, I mean, it's been however many years.
That's from 2004.
Yes. Broadway producer Marty Richards says, oh, he's incredibly talented. He's extremely attractive. I know 5 billion women that are crazy about him. If he wanted to, he could have married about 63 million heiresses. And I know 3 of them personally. Oh, Deborah Norville said, it was like an angel was in the room.
Wow.
Because you're known for getting up at dinner parties and singing Some Enchanted Evening.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I'm not sure I'm going to be able to handle it. Okay, let's just take a, let's take a second before that.
You may not be able to stand up for a while.
She said, it was just gorgeous, and he's so handsome. It's magic. Have you looked in his eyes? You see the kindness.
Aw.
Obvious. You've either played opposite or dated every fantastic, beautiful woman in the world. You played opposite Patti LuPone in Can-Can, right?
Yeah.
You were Catherine Zeta-Jones' boyfriend in The Terminal, the Steven Spielberg movie.
That's right.
And you, as you said, there's worse things to be doing professionally than kissing Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Yes. And Steven said to me, he said, Michael, I'm not going to direct you in this scene.
Go for it.
Catherine's going to come up the escalator. You're going to be at the top.
You're going to want to kiss her.
I just want you to kiss her and go for it. So she came up the escalator, and I picked her up, and I spun her around, and I gave her a kiss, and Stephen said, great, great. Moving on. I said, Stephen.
No, let's. We need more.
Do this again.
No, I can do much better.
I've got more in me.
I can do better.
She is
stunning.
Went
down. We did it 3 times. And,
she is stunning.
Wow.
Yeah, that's amazing. She was lovely.
One other, Women Are After Him, then and now, said somebody else. He did Finding Forrester with Sean Connery, opposite Julie Andrews, as we talked about in Victor Victoria. Oh my God, this is how I knew what a great actor you were. I remember this, the 1990 Lifetime film Shattered Dreams. You played a Reagan administration official who beats his wife, played by Lindsay Wagner.
Wow.
Oh my God. Lindsay Wagner. Yeah. You, both of my crushes in one.
Her dog Jamie is named after Jamie.
Yeah, Jamie
Summers,
the Bionic Rescue dog, is named after Jamie Summers.
Yes.
Yeah. but you were really because you were terrifying because you were so obviously kind in person and you were obviously such a everybody's crush from Flashdance. And you said the way you said I can't eat macaroni and cheese. He says was the most one of the most. He turned it into the most terrifying lines. Mm. In
that?
History.
In that,
I can't eat macaroni and cheese.
Was that in that?
Did Lindsay Wagner, did she make you the wrong dinner? Is that what happened there?
I've forgotten about that. That was a particularly disturbing role to play.
I bet.
And God bless the woman who wrote the book and told her story about domestic violence and how kind of crippled and closeted domestic violence victims are. What was her name? Charlotte Fetters.
Mm-hmm.
A particularly disturbing scene was when I had to punch her in the stomach when she was several months pregnant.
Mm.
And it was a very difficult thing to do. I think it served to help a lot of people who saw it and came out and sought help and told their story. Because there's so much shame
that
the victims of violence have.
Yeah, I've talked about it, mine, and it was a woman. But I mean, I think you're right. There is a shame that people go, it doesn't happen to educated women. It doesn't happen to upper-class women. It doesn't happen to smart women. And it happens to everybody, you know. I mean, not everybody, but it happens to a lot of women.
And you will excuse the abused will... excuse the abuser.
Absolutely.
Make excuses for the abuser. They'll get over it. It's just a passing thing. It's stress at the office. It's whatever it is.
Right.
But it is still unacceptable.
Yeah. Yeah. Right? I bet that was hard for you. But so tell me about...
I like macaroni and cheese.
You do. So that was the real acting moment in that. Is you're like, I have to say I hate macaroni and cheese? I mean, who hates macaroni and cheese? Yeah.
Monsters like the guy who beat his wife.
That after appearing in an episode of Touched by an Angel, you became engaged to Roma Downey.
No.
How many Touched by an Angel jokes have you had?
No. We were never engaged.
Oh, okay. Dated.
No, we dated.
Okay.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Have you had more Touched by an Angel or more Flashdance jokes, probably?
No Touched by Angels jokes.
No?
Oh, okay. No.
Okay.
No.
Well, she's currently with Mark Burnett now. They've been married for a while.
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, that's right.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, my God.
The man who made Trump into what he is now.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oi.
What's oi?
It's just, you know, I know people that worked on that show that in people that grew up in New York, everyone's always known who Donald Trump is. And just the fact that this is, that we are in this dystopian nightmare is still, I swear, Michael, every day, and we marinate in it, I still wake up and go, I just can't believe this. This just gets worse every day. Mm. I mean, it literally is like some sort of parallel universe, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. But I keep telling myself the darkest hour is before the dawn.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Come on, dawn.
Yes.
Oh, see,
dawn,
I think
better get here
I was
going
to say when God shuts a window, then he shuts a door too and you're fucked. Okay, that's different. That's different. Okay, you're more hopeful. That's fine.
Yes. Dawn better get here.
Yeah, better hurry.
It's coming.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting. I was reading your background. Son of a WASP mother and an Iraqi father. Grew up in Alpine, New Jersey and Manhattan. Mm-hmm. But even just that, the demonizing of anybody other, right? Anybody, you know, did that, in particularly during the Iraq War, was that a thing that resonated with you that, you know, because I feel like even after 9/11, right? Like everybody got demonized that was of any kind of persuasion that was not just...
Well, I didn't experience being the brunt of that. A lot of people don't know that I have Iraqi roots. My father was born in Baghdad.
Right.
And came to this country when he was 18 years old and went to Georgetown University on a scholarship and met my mother, who was from Boston, and she's of Irish descent.
Mm. Yeah.
But I was upset as anybody was around 9/11 and about the destruction of Iraq, and I was glad to see Saddam Hussein brought down, as I would any despot in any country, including ours.
Yes. Are you inferring that Trump is a maniac? All right. I couldn't help. That was the last joke. That was the last one. It's the last. Go ahead, Michael. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
I apologize. It's all right. See, his voice is very calming to me. It brings me back. Wow, I don't even know what to ask you about first. Goodbye, Columbus. You played Ally McGraw's first boyfriend.
Yeah. Yep.
Early 1980s, wow. You dated Diane Cannon. I mean, seriously, you have dated or, you know, been with or played opposite.
Amazing career you've had.
Yeah.
Well, 50 years.
Yeah.
Started out in 1968, 69 with, I think, Goodbye, Columbus was my first paying acting job. And I had come out to Los Angeles to meet a very famous director named George Cukor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And sat down and talked with him, and he gave me a book to read. And he said, I want you to read for this part. He died. Nothing came of that. But while I was here, I had heard the name Freddie Fields, and I had heard that he was a top agent. And I called his office, and I lied about having an appointment with him.
I remember his name, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And I got to his office.
Acting, lying, pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Got into his office, and he said, he said, we both know you didn't have an appointment here. What are you doing? And I was, 21?
Uh-huh.
Wow.
And I said, I want to be a movie star. And he said, good for you, good for you. And he assigned me to Alan Ladd Jr., who took me over to Paramount Studios that afternoon to meet Larry, blanking on his name. Sorry, Larry.
Sorry, Larry. Larry, someone famous. Okay, go ahead.
Larry Pierce.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, who was directing this movie, which was Ally McGraw's first movie, and Richard Benjamin.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And Richard Dreyfuss had a bit part in it.
Wow.
And he put me on tape. I went back to New York. I was living in my parents' apartment in Manhattan.
Yeah.
And I got a Western Union telegram that said, you begin work playing the role of Ally McGraw's boyfriend, 3 weeks' work, $750 a week.
A week?
That was more money.
Wow,
than,
yeah.
Wow.
And you'll be sharing a dressing room with Jack Klugman.
Oh wow.
I didn't know who he was.
Wow.
And we filmed it in New York and in...
And oddly, you are an odd couple. Can I just say you and Jack Klugman?
Yes. And so we did that film, and I was so terrified. I'd never been in front of a camera.
Wow.
I hadn't been on stage except in school. And when I had my one line where I walked up to Ali McGraw and asked her if I could have a dance, mm-hmm. and there was this Panavision camera, barrel of it, and I'm looking down, and Larry's atop the camera, and he's looking down, and he says, "Action." And I go to Ali and I said, "May I have this dance?" To which Larry said, "Jesus Christ." He said, "All right, do another one. Do another. Do it again.
Do you have hair on your balls yet?" Jesus. All right, I just have to read. Okay, can I read two more women quotes? Nikki Haskell, who I love, the diet guru. Mm-hmm. I love her. She says of you, "He's extraordinarily handsome, and every time I've ever been in his company, the women actually jump on top of him."
Does that happen every single time?
And then some French actor said, the effect he has on women, oof. You know what I mean? It's oof. So deep. Oof. That was the word she used, just oof. Oof. Some in a French accent. Yeah. Just a, oof.
You know, if I were Paul Newman sitting here and you were going on like this about him, he would probably refer to his blue eyes and say something like... his tombstone, "Here lies Paul Newman, who died an unknown because his eyes were brown." I wonder, you know, if not for being blessed with looks, and which has nothing to do with my ability, my talent.
Yeah,
I can take no credit for this any more than any of us can. Beyond taking good care of ourselves.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But the interior world is something that I will take credit for.
Yeah. Will you meditate?
The values that I have and that are important to me, that I will take credit for, and love to talk about that, because that's something that I think we all need encouragement.
Sure.
I just came from being with some friends, and we were talking about the importance of feeling that we matter. And about self-esteem,
mm-hmm.
and about bottom line is, do I matter?
Mm-hmm.
And when we get to a certain age in our lives, when we've done a lot, the question is really, do I matter? Am I relevant? Am I still relevant? What can I do to feel relevant? Do I have a sense of purpose, a reason to get up in the morning, somewhere to go? And the older I get, the more I know that service is the key.
Yeah.
Is the key. And that became particularly vivid to me during a national tour of South Pacific right after 9/11. And we did a fundraiser after every performance.
Yeah.
It brought the curtain down, and we sang God Bless America with the audience.
Sure.
And it was cathartic and healing, and I had never had such a strong sense of purpose and of doing the right thing at the right time. And making a positive difference to people.
Sure. Well, that's what someone was talking about, your eyes. It really is true, the whole windows to the soul, and they see the kindness. But because you're right, there's beauty inside or out. There's a lot of pretty ugly people in Hollywood, I have to say. But, I love what I was saying about someone else said he's very, very in touch with his female side. He understands women very well. This is when it just killed me. Does he have a favorite part of the woman's body? The nape of the neck. Oh, I'm out. How do you take care of the outer beauty? What do you do? Do you work out? What do you, because you're okay. Look
how do
the same.
How do I take care of?
When my best friend told me that you moved, that she moved in next door to you, I was like, all right, wait, slow down. Go slow. And she's like, he is just as handsome and he's so nice. And yeah. Oh, right? That's your dog.
And that's Charlie.
Charlie. That's Charlie.
Hi, Charlie.
That's Charlie Michael Norrie's dog.
Charlie, come here. I'll scratch the nape of your neck. Charlie loves to have his nape scratched.
Who doesn't?
Yeah.
But no. What do you do? How do you take care of the? You know, you were talking about taking care of yourself.
Yeah, hiking.
Yeah.
I was a
look how happy our dogs are together. We live right here in the hiking.
They'll get along great. We'll go hiking.
That commitment was gone the second you started talking to me.
Oh, Steph.
What?
Your mom will be so happy.
Oh, my God. My mom is 96.
Unbelievable.
Please.
Wow.
Yeah.
She has one last dream. She's like, oh, he was extra hot in Flashdance.
Well, we hike. We hike. I was a gym rat for a long time. Uh-huh. And I was admiring.
Why are you looking at him?
Because look at him. Look at this guy. I mean, both of them.
Yeah.
This is Pilates muscles over here.
You're right. That's Pilates. This is gym.
Yes.
Right. Charlie, yes.
Hi, Charlie.
Yeah. Come on. All right. We have lots else in common. We were both born in Washington, D.C.
You were.
Yes. You went to Rollins College in Florida. I got a scholarship to Rollins College. I ended up going to USC because I was, of course, on the crew team.
So was
with Lori Loughlin.
Were you on the crew?
No, I was not.
Oh, because I did. I rode.
Oh, wow.
Oh, did you really? Yeah, yeah. Oh, my God. No, that was
rowing.
A joke. No,
very cool.
A joke.
That's a serious commitment, too. Like, you get up at the crack of dawn.
Yeah.
I remember in college, people were like, oh, I'm doing crew. And it's like, you get up at 5 a.m.
Yeah. Yeah.
The water's flattest. At that time.
And that's sleeping into us now.
Yeah.
You sang the closing theme song for Search for Tomorrow on CBS,
mm-hmm.
on which you played Steve Caslow. I did not. Oh, my God.
And you were on Somerset, too, weren't you?
That was the very first
thing.
You're
yes.
right.
Yes. My mom watched that, and I kind of remember the TV being on to Somerset.
You know who else was on that?
Who? Ted Danson.
Ted Danson.
That's right.
Oh, my God.
I knew that.
I love Ted. So wait, I just love people's pre-acting stories. You spent 3 months selling insurance. What sort of insurance?
Ooh, life insurance.
Oh. Okay.
Life insurance.
Okay.
That was the catalyst for my becoming an actor. I went into my dad's office. It was his life insurance agency in New York. And it was a summer job. And I don't remember whether he said, you're fired, or he said, I quit. I think we said it simultaneously. because I would show up at the office late. I would leave early for lunch. I'd come back late for lunch. I'd leave the office. It was horrible, horrible. I am not a salesperson. I can't stand being in an office. I'm claustrophobic.
How do you sell life insurance? You know, you don't look so good.
Yeah. Hey. You know, one of these days you're going to die.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. I was looking at your voluminous resume. You, like almost everyone that's been on the Happy Hour, was on the West Wing. Playing Senator Roy Turner.
Yes.
We've had Martin Sheen here and Richard Schiff and whatever. But I mean, you've done like NCIS, the OC. I mean, you've done, I can't even.
A whole wide variety of stuff,
we were talking upstairs
too.
About.
That's awesome.
The Gianni Versace film. Yeah.
Yeah. And most recently, Yellowstone with Kevin Costner, which
wow.
Which is great.
And you get to go up and film in that.
Yeah, in Montana and in Utah.
I have a friend who plays a cop on that.
You do?
Yes.
It's a great show.
Yeah, he loves going up there. Yeah. He wasn't, apparently the first time he did a scene with Kevin Costner, it was a fight scene, and he had to throw him down on a table, and the table didn't break the way it was supposed to, and it was a lot harder impact than it was supposed to be. He's like, I don't know if they're ever going to call me back, but they did.
Here's my favorite, that you played Bob Guccione in Manhunt Unabomber.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now when they called you, you go, okay, are you fucking with me because Manhunt's in the title?
Oh, Steph.
Stephanie.
See?
Michael.
Oh, Stephanie.
He's come to our side.
Chris. Travis. No, don't. This is my ill-trained rescue dog.
Jamie Summers.
They're beautiful.
No, this is how, I fell even more deeply in love with you because there was a story, you know, there was about how much you love animals and how devastated you were by the loss of your dog and one of your cats. And it's
I
know.
You have done your homework.
Oh, wow. I've done. The FBI background check came out clean. Everything is.
You're allowed in the house.
Yeah, but no, it's just, you talked about, you're right. I don't, I mean, you have obviously real children. I have these, you know, when people say, oh, they're like your kids, your dogs. I'm like, no, they're not like my kids.
They are your kids.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah. Oh my God. That was like, I was like, oh, all right. Because you talked about just the devastation. You had a golden retriever for 14 years.
Yeah. Chauncey. Yes. Yes. That was hard. But I feel now with little Charlie, that he is the spirit of every one of his predecessors is present in him.
Yeah.
I feel like they're all here.
I know. I feel like Max sent Jamie to me because I was so devastated, you know. And, you know, there's things they do that are the same that you're like, oh, that only Max used to do that. Is that like a...
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you've probably been asked like a million questions about this, but what was it like... when you're in a hit movie that big, first of all, did you have an idea it was going to be that big a hit?
No. Nobody did.
Wait, do we really like dancer, welder? Okay, whatever.
No.
Like, or what did you think it was going to be like?
Nobody had any idea. The first time I went to see, meet with Adrian Lyne, I was broke. This is 1982.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was living in New York. I was doing an off Broadway play. I wasn't broke, but I was
right
struggling. And I was told that Sam Peckinpah wanted to meet me for a movie that he was doing. And that if I would fly myself out to California, we could have the meeting. I did. I met him. Great guy. I was such a fan of his work.
Yeah.
And I met him. No auditioning. He said, you don't have to read. You don't have to audition. He said, I can tell. We're going to go into pre-production next week. And it was a movie called The Osterman Weekend.
I remember that.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Yeah, I remember.
I'm impressed.
Yeah, thank you.
And
we go deep. Like, I go every track on the Flashdance album, and he goes deep on every.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but I remember The Osterman Weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a great movie. I enjoyed it.
And I think Chris Sarandon.
Yes.
Ended up doing the part.
Uh-huh.
That afternoon, my agent sent me a script with the unusual title Flashdance across the page, the title page. I read it. And I liked it better than The Osterman Weekend.
Yeah.
And I had a meeting scheduled the next day, Friday, with the director. I went in, and there in the waiting room, there was Mickey Rourke, Kevin Costner. They were all
oh my God.
Coming out.
Wow.
Isn't it interesting, the Hughes hit movies, you talk about like everyone that was up for it, that, you know what I mean, that, and who got it and how it would have been different. And you're right. You end up, when it's a huge hit movie, you go, oh my God, you two were perfect. Like, the chemistry, you can't really beg, borrow, or steal
and
that.
And when you find out who else was up for the part,
yeah.
And I look back on that, and I recently, when I was doing Yellowstone, and I met Kevin for the first time, and I said, did you audition for Flashdance? And he said, yeah, I did, and you got it, son of a bitch.
God damn it.
And I said, yeah, you know, and because you didn't get that, you've been suffering ever since.
Right.
Sorry things went so bad.
Yeah.
So wow.
I read for Adrian, and it was at about 5 o'clock on a Friday afternoon.
And with Jennifer?
They were looking for Jennifer because they wanted to get us in the room in front of a camera to see if the chemistry was
right.
They couldn't find, and I had this wonderful, very tough agent, Arnold Rifkin, at the time, who kind of held their feet to the fire and said, hey, you know, I was in that enviable position.
Yeah,
of,
where you had something else.
I had something else over at Fox, and he said, hey, you know, or get off the pot.
Right.
And they did, and they made the offer, and the rest is history.
Wow. And did you, did you sense that chemistry with Jennifer Beals, like, immediately? Or, I mean, how does it, I always wonder how that works, right? Because you just think, like, what goes into making not just a hit movie, but like a giant hit movie.
Yeah. Iconic movie.
Sure.
Yeah.
I think that, there can be chemistry between two actors, and it's possible for that not to communicate to the audience. Conversely, I think that there can be a lack of chemistry between two actors, and somehow there will be something that is communicated.
Yeah.
It can kind of, in spite of that lack of chemistry between the actors.
Right.
With Jennifer, I think that for somebody to not have chemistry, for them, he would have to have his pulse checked. I mean, was
that ad-libbed, her taking her bra off under her shirt during dinner?
She did that during her audition.
Okay. And so they had to write that in.
With Adrian, and he said, you've got the part.
That's a skill set I did not know. Okay.
Didn't think of that. Lobster with your fingers, okay.
But we did not, nobody had any idea that the movie was going to do what it did.
Yeah.
In fact, they weren't going to push it.
Because it inspired music videos. It inspired fashion. It was such an iconic
movie. Oh my God, I think I actually.
Break dancing.
Yeah.
Out of college. I think I lost like 20 pounds out of college, like working out to that, you know, to that.
There's a Flashdance workout video.
Yes,
right.
Right. Because you're just like, it was so sort of inspirational in a lot of ways. I think it was early on, even almost like weirdly like female empowering. It was sort of, you know, it was all of that, you know, mixed into one. And I think that, I guess your chemistry, but I just wonder, like, what was that like for you when that hit? Like, what was it like just being on the street or in a restaurant or what?
It was really cool. Really, really.
See, I love that honesty. That, yes. A lot of people are like, it's really horrible.
It sucked. It was terrible.
Are you kidding? You know, when you're part of, it happens so infrequently to be part of a huge hit, mm-hmm. whether it's a TV show or a movie, it's very rare that it happens. And it shrinks the world in that you are trotted out on red carpets literally around the world. You are flown on private jets or first class around the world to do promotion for the film. And it's a very spoiling experience. Mm-hmm. And I can understand why it can mess with people's heads.
Okay. Right. Because it's so sudden and so huge.
It's sudden and huge, and it takes some adjustment. I haven't had that experience of that magnitude in anything since, except for Victor Victoria with Julie on Broadway. That was the same level, and even more gratifying because there was more real work involved in that.
Yeah.
So much in movie making.
A whole different facet of yourself.
Yeah. Well, yes. In film, you do a scene, and then you are enhanced. Everything you do is enhanced by music, the sound, the soundtrack, the costume, the lighting, all of that.
Cinematography,
When you're on stage, it's you.
Yeah.
And
just the work, yeah.
And
you know, it's so interesting, too. It's, you know, you've remained so sort of just, I mean, you've gone on, done all this other great work. It's so funny. I interviewed Jennifer Beals many years ago on my Oxygen TV show. And I remember they said to me, don't mention Flashdance. Like they said, and this was, I think, right before L Word. I think she was about to promote L Word. And I was like, what? Why not? Like, you know, but then I've heard since then, like, she's not like that now, but there was a period where she was sensitive because, you know, cause she's gone on to do other great stuff too. And I think, you know, when she was about to do L Word, it was just like, you know, so everybody deals with that differently. That sort of, you know,
Enough already.
Yeah. Did you go through a phase of that?
And I say more, please. Thank you.
You're like, I didn't make her a lesbian. Yeah. It wasn't me. I don't.
Did you go through even just a little phase of, I don't want to talk about Flashdance right now or?
Yeah. You know, yeah. I always knew that it was because of Flashdance that I'm here.
Okay.
This is why you're talking to me.
Yeah.
That's why I'm here in this room right now. And we did a reading on Tuesday night down at the Grammy Museum of the writings of a wonderful poet named Brian Doyle. And we had J.K. Simmons, and we had Wendy Malick, and we had some wonderful people, Bruce Valanche.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And we had...
Oh, my God. Well, he was just here.
Yeah, he was just here like two weeks ago.
Yeah.
He's just the best. He's
yes.
brilliant.
Oh, my God.
In the bio, everybody had their little bio, and there was my little thing, and it said Johnny Versace and Flashdance. Flashdance will always be there.
Right.
So I'm not going to...
But I love that... You know, like that's so refreshing and honest when you're like, was it like, it was fucking great, man.
Yeah, that's you know, awesome. Like, that's awesome to hear.
Oh, it's all, because you're like, really, why would you become an actor if you don't want, right? I mean, that's what, you know, and I just think that it's so honest and refreshing to sort of embrace it. And then, you know, it's not that you haven't gone on and done other great stuff, but you're not like,
no.
Because I think it is weird how certain movies like mean a lot to people for whatever reason. For women of my age, that means a lot, and it's not just obviously you.
Sure,
but you know, it is that sort of something, right? Female empowerment, something. Whatever the message is, I think those movies are. There's always a reason they're that big a hit.
Well, and the message of Flashdance was: you give up your dream, you die.
Right,
and that was a spun.
Take your passion and make it happen, Michael. Is my point.
That,
yes.
I will do the whole Flashdance unless you. Album, unless you sing some enchanted evening.
Did you just say Flash Pants?
She did.
I think
you did. I took my pants off like an hour ago. I hope that's okay. I'm going to start crawling across the floor and singing Manhunt to him in a second. And you
don't.
I've only had half a glass of my Because Trump wine glass. Okay.
So
it's a reasonable drink.
With some enchanted evening, what happens at parties? Do you belt that out because...
Somebody would ask me to sing Some Enchanted Evening, and I'm very happy to do it because
I certainly wouldn't want to ask, but if you want, you certainly could just sing.
Yeah? A bit. You want to hear it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. It's going to get awkward.
Okay. Here we are in the middle of the afternoon.
That's right.
I'm going to pass
in Los Feliz, California.
Yes.
And I'm singing to you, Stephanie.
Oh. Okay. She's quivering.
I seriously might pass out. Somebody catch me. Uh-huh.
Some enchanted evening, you may see a stranger. You may see a stranger across a crowded room. And somehow you know even then, that somewhere you'll see her again and again. Some enchanted evening.
Oh, my God.
Someone may be laughing. You may hear her laughing across a crowded room.
Okay. Don't do the flash dance splash.
And night after night, as strange as it seems, the sound of her laughter will sing in your dreams.
Okay. All right. Oh. Thank you. All right.
Yeah. I know what
you're
doing.
Okay, yeah, don't
amazing.
Make any jokes about everything being barren down there, because not anymore, man.
You're sitting in a wet spot.
All right, not anymore.
Oh, jeez. I know what you're going to be thinking about tonight when you go to bed.
Michael, this was so kind of you to do this.
Yes.
I just, my best friend happened to move in next door to you, and seriously, ever since she told me, I just was like, oh, my God, can you? And you did it. You made my dream come true.
Oh, you're sweet. Thank you.
But thank you just for all your, I'm looking at your Twitter feed right now, just your sort of, is it weird to say feminism for a man in terms of being in touch with your feminine side and being so pro-woman and being obviously just such a lover of women? In this current environment, I just want to thank you for
can
that.
Can we just change the word a little bit?
Yeah.
Because you keep using the word feminine side. And so on.
Yeah.
It's not. Maybe kindness.
Yeah.
Translates.
Kindness
as,
is just that you truly love women. I mean, that you really, it
well,
emanates from you.
There is that, but I also love kind, gentle people.
Yeah.
I approach people, hopefully, the way I approach animals who are my real heroes.
Soulmates, yeah.
So it's not just about femininity, it's about gentleness and kindness.
You asked me out there, you said, oh, when did you come to that you were, and I said, no, I was with men. I was in love with men when I was younger. And I said, you know, because my mom, I told you my 96-year-old mom asked this, you know, yeah. And I said, you know, yeah, I am attracted to men. I've tended to fall in love with women. But I also said, like, I feel like some women of my generation just didn't find men that could handle really strong women that were like you, that were, you know, could handle strong women, or that were sort of in touch with their feminine side, or that were sort of also nurturing and supportive of I mean, what was it we said with, oh, Angela was here, that, you know, I'm too much for a lot of men.
Yeah.
We both said that. And I just thought, like, you have to open some sort of worldwide clinic to teach men to be more like you. That's my point.
It's about not being threatened by a woman. It's about supporting them and being who they can be. It's not challenging them or keeping them down.
Yeah.
I think it's about recognizing how we are very different. Right? We would all agree that men and women are very, very different, and that we have loads to learn from each other. I just came from a men's group that I've been part of for a number of years, and some of the most evolved gentlemen that I who are in my life. And we talk about what we all have to learn from our women, our partners.
Yeah.
And so much of it all goes back to our moms. And I would really want to encourage you and your listeners, if they are not already familiar with Trevor Noah's book and his audio tape called Born a Crime. It is brilliant.
Wow, okay.
And it is all about mother and son love.
Oh, interesting.
And the power of mother and son relationship and love. So I don't know where I'm going with that, but
yeah.
I have a lot to learn from women. They have been great teachers to me. My sister is one of my great teachers.
How many sibs?
I'm the eldest of three.
Okay.
I have a sister and a brother. And my daughters are now my teachers.
Yeah.
They teach me about love. Every woman that I have met, there has been some kind of karmic reason that I have had the good fortune to be part of their lives and have them in my life. I have learned, because I'm stubborn.
Yeah.
I'm stubborn. I'm willful. I'm egocentric. I'm selfish. And
I can't hear you.
Damn.
I can't. And my headphones don't work now.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
You've been married twice, but are you currently, my female listeners will kill me for not asking, are you single now?
Am I single? I am not single. Oh. I'm not married. I'm not
single.
Shit.
I mean, what? All right. You're okay.
I am not betrothed.
Okay. All right.
But he is taken. Well, yes.
This means there's still a shot, ladies. I'm just saying.
No,
I have a generation of women going,
no, Stephanie,
wait a minute.
He's very happily in a relationship.
Yes.
He didn't say that. You put words in his mouth like Bill Barr for Donald Trump. That's what you just did. You just did a Barr memo for what he said. He didn't say that.
It's interesting. We all hear what we want to hear.
Yeah, that's right, Chris.
It's a great thing about radio. You can't.
Right.
No, we're on camera.
Oh, we are.
Oh, I'm not going to waste you. I'm not going to waste you. Yeah, yeah. Okay. All right, Michael, thank you so much. And follow Michael on Twitter. And how else can we love you and support you any more than we do?
Oh my gosh.
If it was any more than I do now, restraining orders in my future.
Yes.
Watch Yellowstone.
Be kind to each other. Oh. Find somebody who's unhappy. Find somebody who's depressed.
Right?
Who's
random
sad.
Acts of kindness are so important right now.
Yes. Yeah. Always. Not just right now.
Yeah.
But especially now, because the world is upside down. It feels like it is upside
down. Trust me, one of my listeners, my 96-year-old mom was just diagnosed with Alzheimer's this week. She'd broken her hip. She's recovered from that. And one of my listeners, I broke the top to her Corningware dish when I was doing dishes when I was there. One of my listeners just sent her the cover. The dish was only made in 1959. My mom called and was so happy, and we had such a great laugh over it. And I thought, like, she has no idea, like, how much happiness that particular act of kindness, you know, meant to me and my mom, you know. So, yeah. But you're right. Just because it's more important than ever now, because there's a lot of people. I saw on Twitter today, Travis, a lot of people after everything. Just Iran and the Alabama ruling and, you know, all the stonewalling. Just they're like, I quit. I give up. People's everything. Suicide, substance abuse problems. People are like, I'm broken. I'm defeated. And, you know, maybe it just takes one of us at a time to go just lift someone else up. Just one thing. Do one thing. Right?
One of the best experiences I had was 2 weeks ago going to the lunch kitchen at a local church and just serving soup. I gotta tell you.
Yeah, and I'm guessing those women were like, oh my God.
Stephanie.
I can't eat now.
Stephanie. He was doing something good.
But he's still, come on. I mean, come on.
It's awesome.
All right. Michael Norrie.
Stephanie, thank you all very much.
Thank you for coming in. We really, really appreciate it.
What a thrill. What an honor. What a pleasure. Yeah. Don't do the flash dance splash again. That was just, it's inappropriate. It makes me look like a maniac. Makes me look like I'm on a manhunt.
You can't stand up right now.
This has really been a feeling. I mean, seriously, what a feeling. All right. I'm done.
So they said soup. You gave me soup? Soup? I came here to see you and all you give me is soup? I want a hug. I want a kiss. What happened to Mr. Flashdance? Fancy Pants. Flashdance. Soup.
Michael Norrie ends as a waiter at Canner's.
Wow.
It's not happy hour.